Morning.
Morning.
We are delighted to have the YOU leaders here with us. So kids, we're in the middle of a series on the Sermon on the Mount, which is Jesus' teachings. I did a whole talk on why do we study Bible and why do we talk about Jesus. You know Jesus is cool, right? Done. We're looking at this, we're doing this series on the Sermon on the Mount because in unity, we emphasize Jesus' teachings even more than his birth or death. What he said, taught, and did to show us what's possible for us when we are fully aligned with God, living from the divine within. And this stuff isn't easy. Living in divine consciousness is not rainbows and unicorns. It's easy to celebrate a divine baby at Christmas or a glorious resurrection at Easter, but don't skip the middle, Jesus' ministry. These are challenging teachings for our challenging human experience. So, some quick background. You know that Moses received the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai. You've seen that movie. And that was the law. God said it, that does it. And for centuries, Jews believed the way to relate to God was to follow his laws. Those laws were all about behavior. Don't kill, don't steal, don't commit adultery. And even as a child, I remember thinking, that's too easy. I have no intention of killing or stealing. It's easier not to. I might covet a few things. But the one that says, thou shalt worship no other gods, what other gods are there? I learned later that we make gods out of things, people, situations, and we worship them with our attachment. I learned that all the commandments are expanded when we take consciousness into consideration. It's not just what you do, but where you're coming from. And that's what Jesus is teaching here. He is advancing people to the next level. It's not just about behavior, it's about consciousness. And so let's define consciousness as thoughts, feelings, and beliefs, whether you are aware of them or not. Your consciousness is the whole of you. He's addressing us as co-creators, knowing that what we hold in consciousness outpictures. We reap what we sow in thought. He doesn't discount the law of Moses, and that's important. Jesus begins this whole section by saying, do not think I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I've come not to abolish, but to fulfill. So he's expanding on what they already know. He starts by saying, you've heard it said in times of old, but there's more. Now I'm telling you something even greater. There are 10 of these. They're in the book of Matthew, chapter 5, right after the Beatitudes that we talked about last week. And so let's just wade in, and you'll see what I mean by expansion. You have heard it said. You've heard that it was said to those of ancient times, you shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. But I say to you that if you're angry with your brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. If you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say, you fool, you will be liable to the fire of hell. Whoa! Anger and insults are as bad as murder? He's not letting anyone off the hook for breaking the Ten Commandments. He's making them 100 times more difficult to keep. Moving from blind obedience to understanding. Understanding that the thoughts we hold, the consciousness we carry, comes into form in our lives. We reap the results of our negative energy, even if we never act on it or verbalize it. Thoughts are vibrations and they are reflected to us. So he's saying behavior is only the beginning. Yeah, we might refrain from killing anyone outright, but if we still judge them in our hearts, we open ourselves to being judged in return. The measure you give is the measure you get back. If we put that judgment into words, the vibration becomes even stronger. So we have to heal from within if we want to change what is without. Peace begins with me. So, he says, when you are offering your gift at the altar, if you remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother or sister, and then come and offer your gift. This is how. How do we heal within? By taking responsibility and addressing it directly. Jesus is saying you can't pray, you can't work one-on-one with God and ignore God's other children or be in conflict with them. You have to show up clean, with clarity and peace in your relationships and no negative energy. And of course, we don't always do that. I mean, have you ever prayed when you're angry at someone? The Old Testament's full of that. God, please smite my enemies. And so here's Jesus trying to advance us, to help us clear our own blocks to good. Then the divine within can express purely. So he elaborates on this part about being in conflict with other people. He says, come to terms quickly with your accuser while you're on the way to court with him. Or your accuser may hand you over to the judge and the judge to the guard, and you will be thrown into prison. Truly, I tell you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. Come to terms quickly with your accuser. Some translations say, make friends. But who is the accuser? And what's this about court and judges and prison? I mean, again, most of us really are not in danger of being convicted and going to jail. Right, kids? Except in our heads. The accuser is that critical voice we talk about often. The adversary is within. And if we argue with it, we give it energy and power, and we're letting it set the terms of the debate. So instead, resist not evil. Make friends. Enfold it in love. Replace every judgmental thought of yourself with unconditional love. And the part about you won't get out of prison till you pay the last penny, that's karmic debt. Or another way to say it is, you won't be free until you learn what you came here to learn. Heal what you came to heal. These first three are about the thoughts we hold, clearing out conflict and negativity. And then there's this. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you, that everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. How many of you are old enough to remember Jimmy Carter? I always think of him with this verse. So for the rest of you, Jimmy Carter was president of the United States in the late 1970s, and he referred to this verse and admitted having had lust in his heart. Now, Jimmy was a Baptist Sunday school teacher. This was a very familiar verse to him, and probably everybody admitted that occasionally they lusted in their heart, but all hell broke loose in the media because they'd never read the Bible. That's not fair. I was one of them. But this is a great example of how Jesus expanded the law. In the early days, the law was, do what you're told because God said so. Jesus is not introducing new laws, but a whole new way of relating to God. Actions do have consequences. He's not undoing that. He's saying thoughts have consequences too. They have power. And we can entertain thoughts like lust and reap negative energy, or we can brush aside thoughts. You already do that. You don't dwell on everything that crosses your mind. You have a choice. And he is saying, choose consciously. You're not hostage to your thoughts. You don't have to believe them. You don't have to give them energy. He's not warning you that every fleeting thought will manifest in your life. He's saying the thoughts we entertain have consequences, energetic consequences, whether we act on them or not. He's giving us a new definition for what the Bible calls righteousness, right living. Until then, you were righteous if you followed the law with your behavior. Now it's about consciousness, what we harbor within. And then he really hammers home his point. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out and throw it away. It's better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one of your members than for your whole body to go into hell. He said it twice. This could give little kids nightmares. But this is typically Middle Eastern. Exaggeration, superlatives, it's the way they talk. It's what made Jesus' teachings so memorable. This is about taking control of your consciousness, what you think, feel, and believe, as well as what you do. And again, it's about choice. You are always choosing heaven or hell. You create it right here in your life. The kingdom of heaven is the consciousness in which we fully experience our oneness with God. He's saying, don't let anything get in the way of that. Seek first the kingdom, he says later on in this Sermon on the Mount. I think this is also about letting go of attachments. Another frequent lesson from Jesus. I am pretty attached to my eyes and my hands, but he's saying nothing is too precious to give up if it keeps you in hell instead of divine consciousness. To be willing to let it go. It was also said, It was also said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that anyone who divorces his wife, except on the grounds of unchastity, causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. I know. Okay. I would prefer to think Jesus never said this and it was added later, which could be true. No one was taking notes while Jesus taught. The Gospels were written decades later as the teachings had been handed down orally. And there's no doubt that some words were put in Jesus' mouth by the writers to address the issues that had shown up in the early Christian churches. But this is in keeping with everything else he's teaching in these you've heard it said passages. He's already told them thoughts are as powerful as actions. Now he's saying be careful with words too. Be careful with the commitments you make. In the book of Mark, when he talks about marriage, the quote is, "What God has joined together, let no man put asunder." So Jesus might have had some strong views on marriage and divorce. But more broadly, he's saying, don't trifle with what you're creating. If you know that your thoughts, words, and actions are truly God's power expressing on earth, you need to take that seriously. The next one is similar. He said, again, you've heard that it was said to those of ancient times, you shall not swear falsely, but carry out the vows you've made to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let your word be yes, yes, or no, no. Anything more than this comes from the evil one. Swearing, of course, was not cursing. It wasn't cuss words. It was taking an oath. Most of the people then were illiterate, so they didn't sign contracts. They swore oaths. Again, it's don't trifle with the power of words. And he's saying, keep it simple. Just yes or no. Don't get sucked into a lot of drama. The evil one that manufactures the drama is within us too. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist an evildoer. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth is in the Old Testament three times. It dates from the Code of Hammurabi in ancient Mesopotamia, 1700 years before Jesus. And at that time, it was progressive. It meant let the punishment fit the crime. You remember those 603 commandments that followed the Big Ten in the Old Testament? A lot of them carried the death penalty. A child disobeys his parents, put to death. Gays should be put to death. So an eye for an eye is called reciprocal justice. There's some balance. It's not outrageous penalties for any little thing. It had been the law for many centuries, and Jesus took it further. He said, it's not about finding the correct punishment. Do not resist an evildoer. For me, this may be his most difficult teaching. I mean, how do you put this into practice? Isn't it dangerous not to stand up to bullies? Won't the world just go to hell in a handbasket? All the bad guys will overrun the good guys. Nobody wants to be the first to adopt non-resistance. So he continues with this very familiar example of how it works. If anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go also the second mile. Give to everyone who begs from you, and do not refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you. Jesus lived during the Roman Empire, so he was living in an occupied country. And one of the things the people there really hated was that a Roman soldier could stop you from going about your life and force you to carry his pack for 1 mile. Jesus said, go 2 mile, just for fun, just to see their reaction, just to take back your power. If someone slaps you, and soldiers could do that too, turn the other cheek, which means look in a different direction, see it differently. If someone takes your coat, give your cloak also. I have heard that that would leave you standing there naked, which would surprise the Roman soldiers. It's one of his memorable images. It's outrageous generosity. The first may be forced, but the second is freely given. As my grandmother would say, kill them with kindness. Then Jesus goes even beyond non-resistance to love and oneness and divine consciousness. This is number 10. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and he sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers and sisters, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Be perfect, therefore, as your Father in heaven is perfect. But no pressure. So again, Jesus is advancing spiritual understanding. It's not love your neighbor, hate your enemies. Anyone can do that. Tax collectors were scum of the earth. Gentiles were non-believers. The standards are higher for you because you are spiritually aware. And of course, if you love your enemies, they are no longer enemies. They're people you love. God loves us unconditionally, and that's what we are to do too. Be perfect. If perfect means never make a mistake, we will fail. In the book of Luke, the word is compassion. Be compassionate as your Father in heaven is compassionate. That's loving your enemies, looking past others' faults. But perfection, we tend to judge perfection by qualities. A rose is perfect if it's not wilted, it has no bugs, it smells good. But judging good and bad is dualistic. Being perfect as God is perfect is oneness. The perfection of God is one presence and one power, present in all things, total unity. Perfect in this sense is complete and whole, and we are born that way. And increasingly we feel it as we seek the kingdom, knowing ourselves as perfect expressions of God. So again, it's not about behavior. That will never be perfect. It's about our awareness of our spiritual wholeness, focusing on our oneness with God and each other, loving unconditionally, and allowing the divine to express in every area. You've heard it said, but first we remove the old limiting beliefs and then make room for the new ones, the expanded version. Jesus taught us how to shift our consciousness so we can live in the kingdom of heaven here and now. And next week, Jesus teaches us how to pray. But let's take these thoughts into meditation with Kit.
Let's take a deep cleansing breath. Let it out fully. Get comfortable in your chair, feet flat on the floor. If you need to shift around a little in your chair, just allow your body to align itself comfortably. And continue to breathe deeply into your heart center. And allow yourself to go into that place of knowing that divine being within you. Allow a picture to come to your mind of that being. If it has human form, if it has human form, give it the face you see in the mirror every day. Allow yourself to see the beauty of that face. Greet it with a smile. Yourself to think of what you would say out loud to yourself in that mirror. What do you say to that face every day? Are those words loving and kind? Do you set an intention for your day? Just go about your day without thinking about that person you see in the mirror. So as you're looking at that face right now, let's greet it one more time with a smile. And say silently to yourself and that self in the mirror, "Good morning, beautiful." Good morning, love. Good morning, power. And say to yourself, I am a powerful creator. I am a loving, powerful creator. Greet the world every day with joy, knowing that my word is powerful, my thoughts are powerful, and the two combined are unstoppable. My thoughts and my words are so powerful that I am unstoppable. Thoughts and my words are so powerful that I am unstoppable because I have all of the love and the power and the support. That thing we call God. Right inside. Choose the words, "I am," and fill in the blank. Love, abundance, vibrant health, fulfilling work in this world. I am God creating. Right here and right now. So take that in with a deep breath. I am God creating right here, right now. And another deep breath and bring yourself back to this place. This beautiful community surrounded by these magnificent, loving beings. And join me in singing the Alleluia.